Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
Fiona Pender was 7 months pregnant and ready for her baby. On August 22, 1996, she went shopping for baby clothes with her mother and brother. It was a period of joy and nesting for the 25-year-old hairdresser and part-time model. According to her partner, John Thompson, Fiona was asleep the next morning when he left for work. He kissed her goodbye, left their flat on Church Street in Tullamore, County Avalle, Ireland, and never saw her again. When friends and family couldn't reach Fiona that day or the next, they panicked. There was no reason for Fiona to be out of touch with them. By the time she was reported missing, her loved ones feared the worst. Now, nearly 30 years later, there has still been no trace of Fiona or her child. But that doesn't mean that Gardaí or her family have given up. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Fiona Pender. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This week, we're heading out of the country once again, this time to Ireland. This is our second time covering a case here, and last time I very confidently mispronounced the Irish word for police. I went through the entire episode saying Gardaí, when it should be, at least according to the internet, Gardaí. So as with our episode on Debbie Sasson, I did look up pronunciation of the different towns and counties that we talk about this week, but I saw conflicting answers too. So I just want our Irish listeners to know that I'm trying my best.
I would also like our Irish listeners to know that this is taking place in Tullamore, which is where my favorite whiskey is produced.
Right. Now, a few things struck me about Fiona's case when I was deciding what story I was going to cover. One is the fact that Ireland is a relatively small country, and as such, it doesn't have an incredibly large number of unsolved missing persons cases. In fact, there are so few that Gardaí looked into the possibility of this case being connected to the other Irish one we've covered, the disappearance of Deirdre Jacob. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in this episode.
Okay.
The other thing that struck me about this case is that even though the 30th anniversary of Fiona's disappearance is this year, it's still being very actively investigated, with a big announcement being made just a few months ago. So I figured another push of publicity or, you know, just awareness might help. Like, who knows? It could shake a few witnesses loose or convince someone to talk who maybe hasn't before. Before we get into it, though, we've had a bunch of people join us over on Patreon, so we'd like to take a moment to give some of them a shout out. Thank you to 86B, Whitney V, B. Salzer, Lacey, Caitlin Q, Kate EH, Carrie D, and Sam. We really appreciate your support.
Thank you all so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to get our episodes ad-free and sometimes early, you can join us over on Patreon at any level, starting at just $2 a month, and you'll also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So now, let's get into the story of Fiona Pender. Fiona Pender was born on July 13, 1971, to Josephine and Sean Pender. She was the only girl and grew up with two brothers, Mark and John. The family lived in Tullamore, County Uvalle, in Ireland. Fiona had a variety of jobs as a young adult. She was trained as a hairdresser and had also gotten some modeling jobs. She even lived in London for a time where she worked at a hotel in Croydon. An article in the Uvalle Express says that her partner, John Thomas, also worked in that hotel. Now, given that he's also from the Tullamore area, I think his family has a farm kind of on the outskirts, like the next county over, maybe. It sounds like they went to London together to work at this job. Like, it doesn't sound like they met there.
Got it. Okay.
But either way, the pair returned to Ireland and settled back near where they grew up, renting a little flat on Church Street. In 1995, tragedy struck the Pender family when Fiona's brother Mark died in a motorbike accident. When Fiona announced her pregnancy in early 1996, it was a shot of joy that the grieving family needed, a new life and a new generation to help them deal with their heartache. I haven't read a lot about Fiona and John's relationship, so I couldn't really say what kind of a guy he was back then, or if the relationship was good or bad. Nobody's really gone into depth explaining their dynamic before her disappearance. What I will say is that in interviews given by Fiona's family, none of them mentioned volatility or suspected abuse or anything of that nature. The one potential sticking point that has been mentioned was religious. Fiona was Catholic and the Thompsons were Church of Ireland family.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, so there have been reports that John's father and sisters didn't approve of Fiona because of this, but the family has strongly denied that. John said that the difference in religions wasn't a real issue, and Archie, Thomas's father, told the Uvalle Express that he liked Fiona and that he was even giving the couple a piece of land on which they could build a house.
I mean, if that's true, then clearly there was no issue.
Yeah, as I mentioned, the Thomas family owned a farm, so I got the impression that they were just giving them a piece of land from, like, that land that they already owned.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to prove, really, one way or another, if that was an actual plan
if that was actually going to happen.
He's just saying that after the fact, you know?
Yeah.
He told the paper, quote, "All I wanted was that John would find a girl he was happy with, and I couldn't care less whether she was a Protestant or a Roman Catholic or no religion. I couldn't care whether she was black or white," end quote. So it's hard to say. Obviously, there's a long history of very serious religious conflicts in Ireland, so I can see how that would potentially be a major issue in a relationship. But we don't really have concrete proof that that was the case here.
Right, and the conflict would be more so with their parents' generation than potentially with theirs.
Yeah, you know? No, and I think that's probably true. And the article kind of did allude to that, saying that it was like more like his family that didn't approve. But yeah, again, you know, I mean, how much did that really play into Fiona and John's relationship? You know, right. Like it's just, again, it's just hard to say.
Yeah.
The last time Fiona was seen by people outside of her home was on Thursday, August 22nd, 1996. As I mentioned in the intro, she was in her nesting phase and went shopping for baby clothes with her mother and brother. They dropped Fiona off at her flat that evening and said goodbye, never dreaming that it would be their last and that they'd never get a chance to meet her baby. According to John, the next morning, Friday, August 23rd, he left at 6 a.m. to go work on his family's farm. Fiona was still sleeping, and he says that he kissed her goodbye and left. Fiona was close with her family and friends and sounds like someone who was always in contact. Her mother, Josephine, said that she spoke to her daughter daily. On the 23rd, one of Fiona's friends stopped by her flat to say hi, but no one answered the door. The curtains were drawn, and the friend just assumed Fiona was sleeping. John apparently spent the night at his family's farm outside of Tullamore on the 23rd and later told reporters that he didn't realize Fiona had gone missing.
Hmm. Is that a convenient excuse or was he really there?
Well, I think he probably was really there. But what I would be wondering is if that was normal. Like, was it normal for him to leave early in the morning to go work on the farm, stay overnight, and then presumably work the next day as well?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is that something he often did? Or would he just go help out during the day and come home typically? And then this night he happened to not go home.
Right.
You know, and also apparently didn't try to reach out to Fiona. Or if he did try to reach out with her, wasn't concerned when he couldn't get a hold of her.
Yeah.
You know, like either right. way, it seems a little weird.
Did you say what time the friend came by on the 23rd?
No, the articles I read weren't specific. It sounds like it was like early afternoon, maybe.
Okay. I'm just trying to get the timeline down. So if we are to believe John, 6 a.m. was the last time he saw her.
Yeah.
And then a friend sometime like early in the afternoon stops by. There's no answer. So if his timeline is true, that's, you know, 6 a.m. to noon-ish. Yeah. Some time around there. I mean, it's a large gap.
It is.
But it would be odd that something would happen. I mean, those are daylight hours.
Yeah.
You know, and you said it's a flat, so I'm assuming it's in
a building town. With other, exactly. No, right. It was in town in Tullamore. And, you know, it's not like it was a huge city. They're not in Dublin or whatever, but still there are
other
people.
Around. There's other residents. It's not like they lived on that little plot of land on the outskirts of Tullamore.
Yeah, on a farm in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah, no, it definitely wasn't like that.
So if something happened there, presumably people would have heard it.
Right.
Because again, it's daylight hours. Or if she left and wandered somewhere, people would have seen her.
Yeah, I mean, again, she was 7 months pregnant at the time.
Yeah.
And it sounds like she was well known around town. She had grown up there. So yeah, I mean, I think if she was like wandering around that day, somebody would have seen her.
Was she a hairdresser still?
Yeah.
Like, what was she doing for work at the time?
Yeah, at the time, I believe she was still a hairdresser.
And we don't know if like her, she didn't show up for a shift.
Yeah, I don't think
like
it was the weekend. I don't know that she was supposed to be working.
Okay.
You know, I don't know, but that's never been mentioned in anything that I've read. So it doesn't sound like she had been expected to work. It sounded like she had the day off or wasn't really expected to be anywhere. So that's why nobody really was super concerned on the 23rd.
Right.
Because it doesn't sound like she missed anything specific on the 23rd.
Yeah, that's more of what I was getting
at. Exactly. It was just like I said, the one friend came over, thought it was a little weird that she didn't answer because I think, you know, she was expecting her to be home.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she was 7 months pregnant. Like, you get tired, you know? So I think that it was completely reasonable for that friend to assume that maybe she was taking a nap or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, you know, her mom says she talked to her every day, but had just seen her the evening before.
Right.
So like, yeah, maybe she tried to call her once or whatever, just figured they missed each other. You know, there's just no reason to freak out that day.
Right.
So anyway, so back on the 23rd, John leaves and spends the night at his family farm. According to him, doesn't realize Fiona's missing. So it's the next day, the 24th, when Josephine still is not able to get a hold of Fiona. And I don't know if she gets a hold of John during this period at all, but nobody can reach Fiona on the 24th. And by this time, it's been, you know, 2 days since anyone besides John allegedly has seen her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they get worried. And so that's when Josephine calls the police to report her daughter missing. Despite her pregnancy, Fiona's case was treated as a standard missing persons case for the first several days of the investigation. She was an adult, after all, and there was no sign of foul play, so Gardaí were operating from the perspective that her disappearance could have been voluntary. Because of that, no large-scale searches were immediately undertaken, and a national appeal for information didn't go out until 5 days after Fiona was reported missing.
Lost memories in those 5 days. That's a long time.
It is. It's too long. And what shows, you know, how detrimental that possibly could have been is that even though it was 5 days later, they did get tips. Tips that really could have been followed up on 4 days previously. You know what I mean? So when that appeal went out, Gardaí received some very interesting information. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying about them living in a flat and, you know, people being around, because people were around. A local man came forward and said that he had seen two men carrying something that looked like a rolled up carpet from the apartment building where Fiona lived. He said he then saw them put the object in the back of a four-wheel drive vehicle. The mention of a four-wheel drive vehicle is especially important because another man came forward and said that on the night of August 22nd, which was the day that Fiona was last seen by her family, he was almost forced off a road south of Tullamore and in the direction of Schlieve Bloom by a speeding four-wheel drive vehicle.
What do they mean by a four-wheel drive vehicle? Like a truck?
Or like an SUV, something like that. And you got to remember, you know, this is Ireland in the 90s. Like, there were not a lot of larger vehicles like that. It's not like freaking America where everybody has a gigantic-ass SUV or truck. Like, the cars there are generally pretty small. And so, you know, an SUV, like something like that, would kind of stick out.
And so this witness said it was the night before.
The 22nd, yeah. It would take over a decade, but this wouldn't be the last time Shalev Bloom would be brought up in this case. Around this time, ground searches did take place. So now we're about like a week into it, 5 days, you know, however long, and divers searched the Tullamore River and the Grand Canal. Tracking dogs searched on the ground and Air Corps helicopters were deployed. Every maternity unit in Ireland and the UK were notified just in case Fiona ended up in one, but she never appeared. Most of us are trying to get healthier, but we're guessing about which habits actually matter for our bodies, and we're all different. So what if you can measure how your body is aging and know exactly what to focus on next? Listen, I need instructions, and that's what True Diagnostic does. They test your biological age and key health markers, and then they give you a clear 90-day plan based on what your body needs without the guesswork. The test is so easy to take at home. They send you the kit, you take a little finger prick, send it in, and then you get this amazingly detailed report back that tells you everything you need to know. I'm so excited to get my next round of results to see if I've improved or what's changed in general since the last time I took it. I'm really interested in the True Health test, which tests over 105 biomarkers, including vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fatty acids, to understand my system's health right now. True Diagnostic is trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. And right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code ATTWG20 at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com and use code ATTWG20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. Did you eat? That's usually the first thing Ethan says to me when he gets home because, honestly, some days I just can't even deal with it, so I don't. Luckily, Factor makes healthy eating easy with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs, so you can eat well without the planning or the cooking. Their meals include lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole food ingredients, and healthy fats. And you can choose meals that fit your individual goals, whether that's healthier eating, calorie management, or more protein. They also have 100 rotating weekly meals to keep things fresh and delicious through the winter. Factor meals are always fresh, never frozen, and ready in about 2 minutes. Ethan's been loving them too. He works a crazy schedule, so it's so much easier to just take these Factor meals instead of worrying about meal prepping on the weekend, which is the last thing anyone wants to do. So if you want to try it, you can head to factormeals.com/ATTWG50off and use code ATTWG50off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscribers only, varies by plan, one free breakfast item per box for 1 year while subscription is active. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. These are functional gummies that are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. I am not surprised to learn that their Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies are their current bestseller because let me tell you, those things work. And I've tried everything, and these get me to sleep, keep me asleep without feeling groggy the next morning. They also have CBD gummies for gentle relaxation and pain relief, or even mind magic gummies for deep work and enhanced creativity. And everything just ships discreetly right to your door. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let them help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code ATTWG when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com. Now, of course, the Gardaí had to look at John as a suspect, and it seems as though they looked at him pretty hard. In fact, in April 1997, 5 people were arrested for questioning. The names weren't publicized at the time, but John later said that he, his father, and his sisters had been arrested.
And here it's important to mention to our American audience that over there, they get arrested for questioning.
Right.
Whereas here, you can be questioned as a suspect without getting arrested.
Right. It's generally more of a voluntary thing for you to come in for questioning.
Right.
Typically here, if there's an arrest, that means like, oh my gosh, we've got evidence. We're ready to take this to court.
Right.
Whereas, and we've run into this with, you know, a lot of different stories, which is, you know, that we've covered in Australia, in the UK, in Ireland, where people are just placed under arrest only for questioning.
Right.
Like it, there's no evidence necessarily.
No. And it's a lot. It's a different criminal justice system.
It's
a different level of guilt, different level of suspicion,
mm-hmm.
Different procedures. So, it's jarring when you hear
somebody was arrested. Yeah.
For especially those of us in America, because like you said, that's pretty much like, oh, that guy's fucked.
Yeah.
You know?
But not necessarily in this case. And especially because we covered a couple of cases too where there were like multiple arrests over years. It's like this guy was arrested, then these people were arrested, then this other guy was arrested. But, you know, again, nothing ever really came of it. So the Thompsons were arrested and questioned, but they were ultimately released without charges. And after that, the case seemed to go cold. John, however, remained a suspect. But then, 2 years later, in 1999, officials seemed to question whether they had been on the right track at all, and another theory came up. So back in 2021, and I talked about this a little bit in the intro, we covered the case of another young missing Irish woman, Deirdre Jacob. She was part of what media dubbed the Vanishing Triangle. I went back and pulled up the notes from that episode, and we briefly mentioned Fiona Pender in it. Here's an excerpt from that episode. Ireland's Vanishing Triangle refers to a group of Irish women who all disappeared in the mid to late 90s. Most of the women, there are 8 in all, were in their late teens to early 20s, and they all went missing suddenly from the eastern side of the country. These women, Annie McCarrick, Fiona Pender, Ciara Breen, Jojo Dullard, Fiona Sinnott, Eva Brennan, Imelda Keenan, and Deirdre Jacob have never been seen again. So in 1999, Gardaí included Fiona Pender's case in Operation Trace, which was a major inquiry focused on multiple missing women cases in Leinster during the 1990s. Operation Trace was designed in part to evaluate whether there was a common thread between cases, and in public discourse, it became associated with the fear of a serial offender. Though, as we talked about in Deirdre's episode, investigators believe that there may be more than one offender in these cases, but that at least some of them are connected.
Was Fiona the only one that was pregnant, though?
I believe so, yes.
I mean, that's a big change in MO if she is actually involved in or linked to those cases.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, and I don't think there really was much of an indication that she was involved other than the fact that she was young and went missing from kind of the same area.
Yeah. It's definitely not going to hurt to include her.
No, absolutely not. But being included in a task force doesn't mean that Gardaí believed that she had been abducted by a stranger. It just means that they were trying not to get tunnel vision. You know, like you said, it wouldn't hurt to include her. It wouldn't hurt to just look at every angle. Some weird things had been happening to women around Fiona's age, and they had to look at the possibility of a connection. And the fact of the matter is, in this case, the reporting over the years has repeatedly suggested investigators believed her disappearance likely involved someone she knew, as opposed to a random stranger abduction scenario. Fiona and her unborn child remained missing, and the Pender family continued to grieve. For her father, Sean, the weight of it all became too much. In 2000, about 4 years after his daughter vanished, Sean died by suicide. In 2016, Josephine was asked by the Irish Independent what she would say to the person who took Fiona. She made her feelings clear, saying, quote, "If I was to say anything to him, I would say, you have destroyed my life and you have destroyed my family. He is directly responsible for Fiona's death, but he is also indirectly responsible for the death of my husband, Sean, who took his own life in 2000, end quote.
She said Fiona's death.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, after the very early days in the investigation, the Pender family didn't believe she was coming back alive. She, like I said, she was just so close with them. She was just so involved in their lives. They were so involved in her life. She was so excited about having this baby. Like, there was just no world in which she would leave voluntarily. And they had to figure if she didn't leave voluntarily, she probably wasn't going to be able to come back. Despite her public pleas, there wasn't much movement in Fiona's case. Then, in May 2008, nearly 12 years after Fiona disappeared, a shocking discovery was made in the Schlieve Blue Mountains. A crude wooden cross. The Irish Times reported that it measured about 0.75 meters, which is about 2.5 feet, and bore the words, "Fiona Pender, buried here, August 22nd, 1996.
Mind blown. What?
Isn't that wild?
What the hell?
Yeah, I mean, completely insane. There are a few more interesting pieces to it, though. It was found by a random person who was just walking in the Mockanoo Woods, and the cross didn't appear to have been there for 12 years. Like, it looked brand new.
So, guilty conscience of one of the people that buried her, or a hoax?
I don't know. So, Gardy said that the wood was fresh, and they estimate that it could have been there for just a matter of weeks before this person stumbled across it. More importantly, the date on the cross was August 22nd.
Right. Not the 23rd.
Not the 23rd when John says he last saw her alive.
So did they dig?
Oh, they dig. But yeah, so like, okay, this is obviously insane for so many reasons. One, you know, the fact that it was put there 12 years later does kind of point toward hoax.
Yeah.
The date of August 22nd points toward, you know,
somebody that was really familiar with the case.
Really familiar with the case. I mean, not just some random person, like somebody who was intimately familiar. So, yes, they did start digging. They did a search in that entire area, but the initial search came up empty. So a lot of people obviously did believe
it was a hoax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, investigators were undeterred. They conducted a second, more extensive search in the area of the cross. Unfortunately, nothing was found. But Gardy weren't ready to completely write this off as a hoax. RT reported that the cross was sent for forensic examination in an effort to determine its origin. The Irish Examiner reported on the renewed search and included a heartbreaking public plea from Fiona's mother, Josephine Pender, urging Fiona's killer to give himself up, telling reporters, quote, "All I want is Fiona back. I don't want anything else. I don't want anyone punished. I just want Fiona back to give her a Christian burial," end quote. She said that she wasn't expecting police to find her daughter's body on that mountain, but also didn't believe that the cross was a hoax.
Mm.
She says she believes that someone with knowledge of what happened to Fiona put it there, but that her daughter's body is buried somewhere on a local farm on the outskirts of Tullamore.
Okay. I mean, you might as well just say it.
Yeah, it is. Right. You know, it is so interesting in reading all these articles, like how careful everybody is about like not directly saying anything about anyone, but making it very clear what they're talking about or who they're talking about or where they're talking about.
So I have a couple of questions, though. Is this location where the cross was found, is that between where their flat was and where John's family's farm was?
Well, I'll tell you what, where it is where that one person said they were almost run off the road.
Yes, right.
The night of the 22nd.
Right. But I guess that's my question, though, is where is it in relation to John's family's farm?
See, I'm not exactly sure because I couldn't really get a good location of like where the farm was.
Just that it was somewhere on the outskirts of Tulsa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can't really say.
Okay. And then next question, do we know, has John's family's farm ever been searched, the land?
No, because they don't have any evidence to search the farm, and the family's definitely not going to get permission.
Yeah. Well, especially not at this point.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. I don't know. I mean, to me, the evidence is pointing at John and some members of his family being involved.
Right. I mean, that one witness outside of their flat said it was two men.
Right.
And John's father, Archie, was arrested for questioning.
Right.
Now, you know, he has three sisters, no brothers.
Mm-hmm.
His mom's never been mentioned, so I don't know, you know, where she was. But again, two men wouldn't really matter anyway if that's the case. Now, it also doesn't necessarily mean that it was a family member either. It could have been a friend. It could have been whatever.
Right.
It also could have been not John at all, you know? But yeah, a lot of like common sense evidence is kind of pointing in that direction. And that's why John has been the prime suspect in this disappearance for 30 years.
Right. And then another question, obviously, this is more of just a question throwing it out there. You probably haven't been able to find any research on it, but like you said, it's not very common or it wasn't very common for there to be large SUVs or trucks or whatever. So uncommon, in fact, that they were just calling it a large four-wheel drive vehicle.
Right.
Which could mean anything. But did they ever find any trace of that? Did the Guardi go looking for that? I mean, I'm sure they did at some point.
Yeah.
Does John's family own a four-wheel drive vehicle for farm work?
Well, exactly. And I have never read anything that specifically said they did or didn't.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I was reading this and I read four-wheel drive vehicle, knowing that we're in Ireland, like my first thought was farmers.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty much who would be using that.
Yeah.
You know, like they're the ones who would have that type of vehicle. But again, I've just never seen anything that is specifically said one way or another.
Yeah. Again, you know, all conjecture.
Yeah, but of course.
The very circumstantial evidence points in John's direction.
Yeah, and there's definitely more.
Okay.
In February 2014, Guardi et Tullamore renewed their appeal to the public in tracing Fiona's whereabouts. Not long after, they received what seemed to be bombshell information, and it came all the way from Canada. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. Then they show up to your door in as little as 2 days. And let me tell you, I'm on the other side of the country and they still got here super quick. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out. I'm an elder millennial, and so jeans are kind of like the thing that I can't figure out right now. And so in my new bag that I just got, I ordered 2 different pairs of jeans because I'm still trying to figure out what actually works for me. And I love it because I can rent high quality designer clothes without having to make that financial investment. Plus, there's no laundry required and no time wasted shopping. So right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 60% off of their first month. That's up to $150 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, A-R-M-O-I-R-E. .style/ATTWG To get up to 60% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again, try Armoire today. In 2014, a woman in Saskatchewan went to police with a pre-written statement saying that she was afraid for her safety and that of her children. She accused her husband of sexual assault and testified in court that he told her, quote, "You know I've done it before. They'll never find you. Is that what you want?" End quote. What's more is she said her husband brought her to a burial site 10 years earlier while they were dating.
In Canada?
No, not in Canada. In Ireland, because the woman the man was referring to was, of course, Fiona Pender, and the person who allegedly made these statements was John Thompson.
No, really? He moved to Canada and started a family?
Yep. He moved to Saskatchewan, Canada with his wife in the 2000s.
Okay.
In 2014, they were going through a divorce, and that's when these allegations came out. John Thompson obviously had long been the top suspect in Fiona's case, so Gardaí were excited. Could they actually have a chance of finding Fiona after all of these years? We talk all the time about how cold cases like this are often solved by change in technology or change in circumstance, and an abused wife who had enough certainly qualifies as a change in circumstance. Now, obviously, I'm reading about all of this in 2026, so it's kind of hard, though, to like see how much of this was made public as it was happening in 2014
right. And
how much just kind of came out later.
Yeah.
But in December 2014, the Irish Times reported on another search operation for Fiona. So they just reported on a search operation, but there was no like tying it to any of the stuff happening in Canada. So that's why I think like that stuff wasn't public at the time. Gardaí were once again searching for Fiona's remains in the Slieve Bloom Mountains area. A strip of woodland was cleared and the search commenced. The report noted that Garda intelligence indicated her killer brought her body to that location after abducting her in Tullamore. And again, I think this intelligence is just coming from Thompson's wife.
Right.
Though they didn't say it at that point. Now, this search lasted 2 weeks, but the cadaver dogs and other equipment failed to find any anomalies or other evidence that would indicate that Fiona was buried there. In a December 27, 2014 Irish Independent article, Gardaí said that they believe the suspect had lied to a witness about the burial location. So they weren't saying like kind of where all this was coming from. They just said they had basically gotten a tip.
Yeah, but I mean, we can piece it together now.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, so police, again, weren't thinking at that point that the wife was lying or was wrong or whatever. They think that John had just misled her as to like the location or, you know, whatever it was.
To scare her?
Yeah. But like didn't actually want to give her real information in case of a situation like this.
Yeah.
John Thompson was charged with multiple offenses, including sexual assault. And this is, of course, all in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But when he went to trial, Thompson was acquitted. The judge even said that his wife had likely fabricated both the sexual assault and the threat allegations in order to influence the custody battle over their two children.
Interesting.
Which, like, that's so hard for me. I mean, not knowing the actual facts of the case and, like, the evidence that was actually presented, like, it's really hard for me to believe that this woman's going to get up in a court of law and just make all of this stuff up. But yeah, I don't know. Thompson later sued the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, saying that they ignored inconsistencies in his wife's statements and used coercive techniques to influence her testimony in court. He was suing for around €125,000, and I'm not sure if that suit was successful, but he did say something that struck me as a little bit odd. Now, this is from a 2025 article in Crime World, and I believe that they got this information from court documents. But Thompson claimed the sexual assault prosecution was malicious and arose out of a, quote, desire for recognition, end quote, in helping Gardy solve Fiona's disappearance. But how could his wife do something like this out of a desire for recognition in helping solve Fiona's case if he didn't have anything to do with it?
Right.
Like, if he didn't have anything to do with it, he would have known that his wife didn't have any information that could have potentially helped them solve the case. So, what?
Yeah, I don't understand that statement at all.
Yeah, and if he's saying that she just made everything up, she would have known that she didn't have a chance of helping solve Fiona's case.
Right.
So again, how was she hoping to get recognition for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's almost an admission of guilt.
Like, it's
almost.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to say.
That's weird. Yeah.
Unfortunately, after that unsuccessful search, Fiona's case went dormant once again. In August 2016, Fiona's mother, Josephine, reached out to the media once again to publicly beg, quote, the chief suspect, end quote, because that's how he's always referred to in the media, to reveal where her daughter is buried. By this time, Josephine was incredibly ill. Despite being relatively young, she had just been transferred to a nursing home after spending 3 months in the hospital. She was scheduled to undergo a heart procedure shortly after this Irish Independent article was published. She told the Independent that she was afraid she would die without knowing the truth and implored anyone to come forward, saying, quote, there are a few people in the community who would know what happened to Fiona. I am also pleading with them to tell me where she is. My heart is completely broken. The person who killed Fiona and her baby, it's their fault it's gone on so long. They could ease a lot of minds, end quote. Unfortunately, Josephine didn't get her wish, and she passed away just a week later. Shortly after her death, Fiona's only remaining immediate family member, her brother John, spoke to the Irish Independent. He vowed to continue his mother's work and do everything in his power to bring his sister's killer to justice. Quote, this is not over until Fiona is found. It's that simple. The time it takes makes no difference. Now that my mother has passed away, it's only reinforced the will to find Fiona and, just as important, bring a murderer who thinks he has gotten away with it scot-free to justice. It is my time to do what I can do for this cause, as I do not stand alone. End quote. John also made it clear where he stood in terms of his belief of who killed his sister, saying, quote, as a family, we have always supported the Garda investigation and their conclusion to who the chief suspect was.
Uh-huh.
End quote. On May 26, 2025, close to the 29-year anniversary, there was another milestone in Fiona's case when Garda announced they were officially reclassifying it as a murder investigation. This announcement led to a new search operation on open ground in County Uvalle, including excavation and forensic and technical examinations. Then, on May 28, 2025, Gardaí issued an update saying they had commenced another open ground search, this time at a location in County Laois, again involving excavation and forensic examinations. So two operations in quick succession across neighboring counties, Uvalle and Laois, both tied to the same murder investigation. Now again, Uvalle is where Tullamore is located, which is where Fiona was last seen. County Laois, I believe, is where the farm is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But unfortunately, as of this recording in early 2026, it doesn't appear as though the searches led to anything. And again, they were in County Laois, but like I said, I mean, as far as I know, the Thompson family still owns that property.
Mm.
I can't imagine they've been giving permission. You know, there is a chance, though, that over the years, like many farmers, I don't know how much land they started off with, but a lot of times, you know, over the years, farmers will start to parcel out some of their land and sell
right.
it.
Yeah.
So there's a tiny possibility that maybe some of it's been sold and was available to search. But again, if you're hiding a body on a land, I don't think that would really be the part you would parcel off.
Probably not.
So what happened to Fiona Pender? This wasn't a voluntary disappearance. So like, I'm not even going to
talk about that.
Like, no. We don't need to waste our time.
No, absolutely not. If she left on her own, they would have several months later, found her in a hospital giving birth.
Yeah. Like, it just, it didn't happen. It also wasn't a suicide, you know? I mean, we had a couple of cases recently where that was very much a possibility. I don't think that's a possibility here. Someone took her. Someone took Fiona. The only real questions are who and what did they do with her? I mean, it could have been some sort of stranger abduction. Fiona was beautiful and she could have caught the attention of the wrong person and had like a stalker that no one knew about.
It's a possibility. Unlikely, I think.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, you can't rule it out because, again, she hasn't been found. But there's no actual evidence of that, nor was there any sign of a struggle at her flat, which, again, if it's a stranger abduction, you would definitely expect to see some sort of a struggle. And the flat is, by all accounts, her family and John, the last place where Fiona was seen. More than likely, Fiona was taken and killed by someone she knew and trusted. If we are to believe the witnesses, she was likely killed inside of the flat in a way that didn't leave blood or signs of a struggle. She was then transported out of the flat in something that appeared to be a rolled-up carpet. You know, again, I'm not thinking it was an actual carpet, and if it was an actual carpet, it wasn't going to be a carpet from the flat, because I think Fiona's parents would have immediately said, oh, hey, their living room carpet's missing or right. whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it, whatever it was something that either wasn't normally in their house or something that the accomplice, because remember there were two men, brought with them. Her body was then hidden someplace where the police have not yet been able to search.
What, my theory?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been alluding to it the entire episode.
Right.
But, I think she and John got into some sort of argument and he strangled her in the flat, called his dad. His dad showed up with this four-wheel drive vehicle and something to carry her out in. They carried her out, took her to the family farm, and buried her somewhere on the family farm. And obviously, I don't know the geography, but if Sleeve Bloom Mountains was on the way to the farm, that matches the other witness description of that four-wheel drive vehicle, or the large 4x4, whatever, forcing him off the road, and then ending up at their family farm, and she's still on the family farm.
Yeah, because why would you bury somebody in a public location that can be searched when you have access to private property
right.
that needs permission to be searched?
Exactly.
What do you think about the cross?
I don't know.
Like, who do you think put it there?
I don't know. It's hard to say. So when was that found?
2008.
So 12 years since she went missing, we don't know what information was actually put out to the public in those 12 years. So, you know,
I mean, I did read contemporaneous articles. And so the dates were out there, right? Like, you know, it was known that she was last seen on the 22nd, but John said he last saw her on the 23rd. I mean, I can almost see, and I'm not, again, like, you know, listen. Blanket disclaimer, we obviously don't know anything, and these are all theories. We're not saying anybody's guilty. We're not saying anybody did anything. These are just possibilities. I could almost see the cross not really being a hoax, but like kind of like almost something done by somebody close to Fiona who didn't have anything to do with her disappearance.
Right.
Maybe as a way to get more searches, get another search, like get more interest, because the case had gone dormant.
Right.
You know, and.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was saying is like, you know, those dates were out there at that point.
Yeah.
To include when the last time was a family member saw her.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure, you know, obviously 12 years, the family has their own very specific theories, I'm sure, right. of what happened, right?
So it could have been somebody that was closely following the case via newspapers, or it could have been a friend of the family or a friend of Fiona, but I don't think it was the killer.
Yeah, I don't think it was the killer.
Guilty conscience on John's part or John's dad.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so either. I do. Whether it was somebody who was following it from afar or somebody who's actually closely connected to the case, but like I said, not responsible for her murder. I can see that being the person who did this, because it did. It got a whole new wave of media attention. It got a whole new wave of police attention. And Shleve Bloom had been a place of interest since the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I can see why, even though they might not have thought that she was up there, like, they would want to trigger a search. They just want to trigger action in this case. And if that is what happened, then, like, you know, good for them. Like, I can't really be mad at it. I don't know. I mean, yes, you could say wasting police resources, et cetera, but it's like, I don't get too bent out of shape about that.
Well, especially because it's, you know, I don't want to say nothing happens in Tullamore, because I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine, you know, there's a lot of murders going on in Tullamore. So I don't want to say they're not busy, because
we don't know. I don't know. We have no idea.
There could be a high crime rate. But when you're talking about a crime of this level happening in a small town in Ireland.
Right.
Maybe extending some resources and doing some extra searches isn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. And like I said, I think especially because this place had been brought up, right? It wasn't just some random location that had nothing to do with anything.
Right.
Like, it seems like there were some reasons to do a search there. You know, it's just we're at the point, it's like, it really has to be a change in circumstance, you know? I don't know that somebody who's directly responsible is going to have a guilty conscience. They haven't in 30 years. So the question becomes, who else knows something? Does the ex-wife actually know something? Did she make it all up as John and the Saskatchewan judge say she did? Obviously, we don't know. I mean, I do think it's a little odd that, according to her, John showed her a burial site 10 years prior and she still married him and had kids. But
okay. But, you know, the abuse probably started long before that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to get into, you know, victim blaming.
No, of course not. Of course not. But if any part of her story, you know, about that is true, and he was using that as a threat against her, is she the only one that he used that as a threat against?
Right.
You know, that just says to me that there could potentially be more people out there who were told something, who heard something.
Right.
Whatever the case may be.
And I'd be curious if anybody else in his family knows anything or was involved.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, all three of his sisters were arrested for questioning.
And the dad.
Yeah, and the dad. So I don't know. I don't know if police actually thought the sisters might know something, or if they were just kind of rounding everybody up in the family, or what the deal was.
I'm curious if his dad is still alive, where the... I know you don't know, I'm not... But, like, what's going to happen to the farm? Like, who does he go to?
I don't know. Because as far as I know, John is still in Canada.
Yeah. So if it, like, when his parents die, does he go to one of the sisters? And then does that change things?
Yeah.
Because then do the sisters go to the police and they're like, have at it. Search the grounds before I inherit it, before I move back on, because I don't want a body on my land.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Only time will tell.
Yeah.
August 2026 will mark 30 years that Fiona has been missing. She was a young woman already dealing with grief over her brother's untimely death, who was excited to bring a new life into the world. She spent her last day buying baby clothes with the people who loved her the most. Today, there's a memorial to Fiona and her baby on the Grand Canal in Tullamore. It reads, quote, "A mother holds her child's hand for only a few moments in time, but she holds them in her heart forever," end quote. Fiona never got to hold her child's hand. That simple act of motherhood was stolen from her. Because of an act of pointless violence, Josephine never got to hold her only daughter's hand again. But just because the person responsible has gotten away with it for the past 30 years, it doesn't mean it's over. Gardaí haven't given up, and neither has Fiona's family. They are still investigating, and they are still making sure that no one in County Uvalle or beyond forgets about Fiona and her baby. Fiona's aunt, Bernie O'Reilly, told RTE that when she filled out the 2022 census, she made sure to write about Fiona in the time capsule section. That's a part of the census which allowed people to write personal messages for future generations. It will be opened and publicly released in 2122. Bernie said, quote, "I wrote about Fiona, so whoever opens it and reads it in 100 years will read about Fiona. Please God, by then they will have found her. We'll all be gone, but I felt I had to let people know." End quote. In closing, Bernie had a message that applies not only to her niece's case, but to every case we've covered on this show. It's never too late. Fiona Pender has been missing from Tullamore, County Uvalle, Ireland, since August 23, 1996. She's a white woman with blonde hair and blue-green eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was approximately 5 foot 5 inches tall and was 7 months pregnant. She was last seen wearing bright-colored clothing and white leggings. If you have any information about the disappearance and murder of Fiona Pender, please contact Tullamore Garda Station at 057-932-7600 or contact the Garda Confidential Line at 1-800-666-111. You can see all of the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!